Good evening. When you open up in the Bible, when you open up the Gospels, for example, our editors and various publishers and Bible translation committees have done their best to section out chapters and verses, which the chapter verses were done a long time ago. But then even small headings, and those are within the chapters. And so those can be helpful, especially for identifying where you are, but they can also distract because they can cause us to think that we are moving on to a totally new subject, when in fact stories may be very much connected to each other, even though there is a different setting and a different set of circumstances within that story that's being told. I want to show you that in Mark chapter 8 and really show you that there's one main thing that is being taught through this entire chapter. And though there are different settings and there are some various stories that are going on, the main idea is that those who are closest to Jesus will see the clearest. And that's really what this is about. So turn to Mark chapter 8. We're going to start off with this miracle of the feeding of the 4,000. Jesus had just previously in chapter 6 healed 5,000, and now he's feeding 4,000. Now notice this, the disciples, so this had preceded this point in time, the feeding of the 5,000. And watch the perspective of the disciples of Jesus as Jesus is really in a very similar circumstance to what they had just recently been in chapter 6. So, chapter 8, beginning in verse 1, it says, "In those days when, again, a great crowd had gathered and they had nothing to eat, he called his disciples to him and he said to them, 'I have compassion on the crowd because they've been with me now 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way. And some of them have come from far away.' And his disciples answered him, 'How can one feed these people with bread here in this desolate place?'" Now, they had witnessed Jesus feeding 5,000 men, women, and children besides just earlier. And now they're in a similar circumstance and they are saying, "What are we going to do? How can we solve this problem?" And Jesus asked them, Jesus is very gracious here. He just asks them, "How many loaves do you have?" They said, "Seven." And he directed the crowd to sit down on the ground. And he took the 7 loaves, and having given thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And they set them before the crowd, and they had a few small fish. And having blessed them, he said that these also should be set before them. And they ate and were satisfied, and they took up the broken pieces left over, 7 baskets full. And there were about 4,000 people, and he sent them away. And immediately he got into the boat with his disciples and went to the district of Dalmanutha. So there is an amazing sign that has taken place. Now, Mark doesn't call them signs. Matthew doesn't. Luke doesn't. John does. John, the final gospel in this, you know, 4 separate gospels, all looking from slightly different angles, John helps us to see that all the things Jesus is doing, I think he just makes it more direct, because Matthew, Mark, and Luke certainly show that the miracles Jesus is doing is more than just a miracle. It's more than just a physical feat. Jesus is teaching something. There's something deeper going on. But the disciples witness this great sign. And immediately after this, there's this other, seems like, section where the Pharisees come and they're demanding a sign. Notice this. "The Pharisees came and began to argue with Jesus, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. And Jesus sighed deeply in his spirit, and he said, 'Why does this generation seek a sign? Truly, I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation.' And he left them, got into the boat again, and went to the other side." So Mark is laying this out purposefully. There was the witnessing of an amazing miracle. which means something deep. Then you have the Pharisees in another place. They come and they're demanding a sign, and Jesus is upset by this. Jesus says, really, you are lacking in faith. We have a perspective, and I hear it all the time, that if only we could witness a miracle, if only we could see something great happen before our eyes, then we would believe. But we forget that there are those in the heavenly places who were literally in the presence of God. They beheld him. They looked on the fullness of his glory and served in his court, and they still were unbelieving. Angelic hosts that saw God in the creation of the world and saw God in all of his majesty, they saw him, and yet they did not believe. Belief is not simply recognizing and being confident that there is a God. It is trusting in what he is calling you to do. So Jesus is looking at these people, and he says, you are faithless. Now, they'd witnessed many things. The Pharisees constantly witnessed things. They witnessed Jesus healing on the Sabbath, and they chose, rather than seeing the miracle and the amazing nature of God, they chose to point out that he did something that went against their tradition. See, that's faithlessness. It's not that they denied the miracle. They knew that it happened, but they did not believe in what he was saying. They didn't truly believe in God. So Jesus sees this, and he sighs deeply in his spirit, and he says that this is really a product of the generation these people are living in. It's a faithless generation. Not just one person, not just a group. And they've all been affected by it to a degree. There was outward, external rules and the looking for some superficial power, but not looking to see what Jesus is really saying. Now, moving on from there, watch what happens in verses 14 through 21. They had forgotten to bring bread. Now, what had happened in chapter 6 when there was a lack of bread? Jesus fed 5,000. What had happened in chapter 8? We just read it. When there was a lack of bread and so many people. Jesus, that's not a problem for Jesus. Now, it's no longer a big crowd. It's Jesus and his disciples, and they're on a boat. And Mark points out, they had forgotten to bring bread. He's helping us to see this is again a problem. Now, if you've been reading along, what should you think? The moment you say, well, there's no bread on the boat and they're hungry, what do you think? No problem. I think Jesus knows how to solve that. That's not what happens. They had only one loaf with them in the boat. And Jesus cautioned them. Now, Jesus knows they're on the boat. There's one loaf. Jesus is watching them. He sees their hearts. Maybe he hears their growling bellies. Maybe there's conversation. I don't know. But Jesus looks at them and he cautions them and he simply says, watch out. In other words, look with your eyes. Beware, which is another way in the Greek of saying look out. They're very similar phrases. Watch out, be aware. So two things. Jesus is saying, look, are you really looking? Do you really see? Do you really truly see what Jesus is doing? Or do you look at the superficialities and it only goes that deep? Watch out, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. What contextually do you think the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod would be? Well, what had the Pharisees just come to do? They were in search of a sign, and yet what did Jesus reveal about their faith? They were faithless. And Jesus said, this is a generational thing. There was a faithlessness like leaven that had pervaded that whole generation. We can get swept up in these things, even us, even you and me. There is a faithless generation that we live in right now. And it takes different forms throughout the ages. But we, if we're not careful, can breathe it in. It's just like leaven. It's very difficult. It's impossible when you put a little leaven into a lump of dough for it not to work its way through the whole thing. Now, by the power of God and by His Holy Spirit, we can be separate, even in an unbelieving world. But Jesus is looking at them and he's saying, are you watching out? Are you aware of the leaven of the Pharisees? That is an unbelief. One that could see and recognize power. One that could perhaps say, there's something about this Jesus. You know, Jesus said, who do they say that I am? Well, Elijah, John the Baptist raised from the dead, a prophet. They could all tell something amazing was going on with Jesus, and they still did not believe. So Jesus looks at his closest disciples, and he says, watch out, beware of that leaven. Beware of that unbelief that is affecting this entire generation. And they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. Mark is laying this out so that we can see that that leaven, which is the leaven of unbelief, is something that they had indeed been affected by. Not as deeply as the Pharisees. They did not reject him outright. They had earlier dropped their nets. They'd left their boats. They'd followed after Jesus. You and I can do the same. We can make the decision to say, I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm going to be his servant. And still have a degree of that leaven within us and not even be aware of it. See, there's a lot of good going on with them. They left their father. They left their homelands. They followed Jesus, literally. And yet, that unbelief resided in their hearts, and Jesus is pointing it out. And you can see it when they're discussing, saying, we don't have any bread. We only have a single loaf. Again, the story is set up for us to look at it and see the ridiculousness of it. But I wonder how harshly we judge those who have preceded us, not recognizing that we often do exactly the same kinds of things. We read these Bible stories our entire lives and fail to apply them. We see Jesus working mightily and God working powerfully through our lives at one point, and then we get through it, and then somewhere down the line we forget what he had done previously for us and how we had triumphed through him. We carry this same kind of leaven within us, and we need to be aware of it. Jesus could see that they were arguing, and he said, why? Notice this, verse 17. Why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Now notice this. Do you not yet perceive or understand? What if Jesus asked us that? What if he did? Do you not yet perceive or understand? We read the Bible all the time. We hear it constantly. We hear the same things on repeat. Over and over again. I wonder if Jesus looked into our hearts, would say that to us. Do you not yet see? Do you not yet perceive? Do you not understand? And then he says this. Are your hearts hardened? Now here's the kicker. Having eyes, do you not see? See, he just said, watch out. Pay attention. But now he says to them, having eyes, do you not see? You witnessed all of these things. You saw two and two, but the conclusion is four, and you failed to make that leap, which is not even a leap, because feeding a few loaves to 5,000 is significantly more than the issue of feeding one loaf to 12 or 13. Having eyes, do you not see? And he says, and do you not remember? Then in verse 19, he asks them. He says, when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? See, Jesus, this helps us to know that this was actually chronological. Sometimes in the Bible, events are not laid out chronologically. A writer may put them in for a rhetorical purpose at one point, even though it didn't happen exactly at that time. That's not what's happening here, because Mark is helping us to see that Jesus is pointing out that they really did see those two preceding miracles, which were massive, and they couldn't make the right conclusion from it. So Jesus just asks them, This is gentle, and yet it's also so direct. I imagine how silly you would feel as a disciple for your master, the Lord of the universe, to say what he said. How many, when I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? And they said, 12. You just hear the hesitancy in their voices and the awareness that this is bringing on them. And the seven for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up? And they said to him, 7. And so Jesus said to them, do you not yet understand? Now, what you see up to this point in the gospel is that it is possible to see a miracle with your own eyes, to even be amazed by it, and to not truly believe following that. Jesus even said to Thomas, you believe because you've seen. Blessed are those who still believe though they have not seen. Belief is not based on the witnessing of a miracle. It has to do with a standing fully on the word of the living God because it is true objectively and we're going to stand by it and trust in it. But Jesus is pointing out to them that they see some things, but notice he says that they do not see clearly. And so, what follows is intended to illustrate exactly this fact. And if you're looking in your Bibles at verse 22, you would see Jesus heals a blind man at Bethsaida. So, no longer on the boat, no longer in whatever other region they'd been in for the feeding of the 4,000. Different setting, different place, they've moved on, has nothing to do with it, does it not? Oh, it has very much to do with it. Mark laid this out purposefully. This is very connected, because watch what Jesus does. They came to Bethsaida. Jesus is so amazing. Jesus sees that the disciples do not see. They see something. They see enough to leave houses and homes and families and districts and lands. They see enough to follow Jesus, to want to sit at his feet and gather his teaching. They do not see enough to make the right conclusion. And so Jesus came to Bethsaida, and the disciples are with him, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit on his eyes and laid his hands on him, he asked him, do you see anything? Now, does Jesus need to do his miraculous work in stages? Does Jesus need to do his healing by way of steps? And where else in the Bible did Jesus have trouble performing a miracle? Where else did Jesus have an issue accomplishing what he wished to accomplish? Here's a blind man. Jesus is going to heal him. And Jesus spits on his eyes and asks a clarifying question. And he's getting the answer and response that he wishes for those around to see. Because the man then says this. Verse 24, he looked up and the man said, I see men, but they look like trees walking. What does that indicate about the blind man's vision at this point? He's not seeing clearly. In fact, if I was to pop out my contacts right now, you would all look like trees. I'd have no clue who any of you were. Without my contacts, I'm as blind as a bat. That's what I imagine this man saw. He can see images, but he does not see clearly. He has been in the presence of Jesus. He's been affected by Jesus enough to see something, but not enough to see the whole thing. And What is this telling us? This is exactly what this whole story is about. The whole story leading up to this is that people are witnessing amazing things. They're seeing it, but they're not really seeing it. They see something, but they don't see the whole thing. That's why Jesus says, having eyes, do you not see? And then he comes to a blind man and he halfway heals him. Okay? That's what this is about. And so Jesus then laid his hands, verse 25, on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. There you go. He saw it all clearly. How do you see clearly? Well, there's two things. Number one, you have to spend time with Jesus. These disciples, they saw something. They saw enough to go with him wherever he took them. But they did not see enough to see clearly. And why was that? What was within them? What did Jesus indict the Pharisees for? And what did Jesus warn them about? That leaven. What is that leaven? It is the leaven of unbelief. Church, we come here every week. Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. Those that are here now, most of us are at all of those times and places. We come here, we hear these things, and yet so often we hear them, but we don't really hear them. We see, but we don't really see. We hear the deep call and the challenge over our lives, and we find it difficult to apply it. Jesus gives a warning, and it's very graciously done. He tenderly says, why are you guys arguing about the bread? Don't you see? Didn't you make these conclusions? What we're intended to walk away with when we spend time with Jesus is there is no threat to his omnipotence. There is no obstacle before him. There is no thing in the universe that is outside the realm of his authority. Your deepest problem, your greatest angst, they mean nothing to him. And we can hear these stories and read them and recognize enough to say, I'm going to be a churchgoer. But we're like the blind man. We see halfway. We get a little bit of vision and a little bit of clarity, but we, because of that little bit of leaven of the Pharisees, that unbelief that still resides within us, we're not able to then move beyond to that point of clarity where we live in peace and where we live with that true joy of the Holy Spirit and the clarity for what is to come and the hope of the future and all of these things. We're not just expressing sentiments. We're not just holding on to little ideas. We have the words of life. We have the gospel for all of the world. We have the greatest treasure, the greatest riches, and it is all found in Jesus Christ. It is before us. I wonder if we see it clearly. If you do not see it clearly, there's two things you must do. Continue to be around Jesus and pray that God would remove the leaven of unbelief that is in your heart. If you made a loaf of bread, which I love to bake, and especially sourdough bread. And look, I'll just be honest. I got on that train before COVID. You remember when COVID was, everybody became a sourdough baker and then all of their starters died a month later? No. That's not how I was doing this for a long time before that. So I like it. To me, it's awesome. Tastes great. It is impossible for you, once a lump of dough has been made, to reach in and grab out manually the leaven. You can't do it. And neither can I. That takes the amazing, miraculous power of God Most High. I believe it takes time spent with him and humble confession to go before his throne on our knees and say, God, I have unbelief in my heart. I don't know how to rid this. Like that man in Mark's gospel who said to Jesus, if you can, heal my son. And Jesus said, if you can, all things are possible for those who believe. And the man said, I do believe. Help my unbelief. See, it's just like the disciples. He saw enough to come to Jesus. He didn't see clear enough to know that he for sure could handle the problem. You and I have the solution immediately before us. Spend time with Jesus, confess your unbelief, and keep coming to the fountain. Keep drinking. Keep pouring prayer into your life, the Spirit of God into your life, and God will root out all of those things within you that you on your own cannot root out. Keep coming. Invite a friend. Grow this place. If you have any need, if you wish to give your life to Jesus, there's an opportunity to come forward. We're going to sing a song. But if you wish to give your life to Jesus, you can do so right now while we stand and while we sing.